1975 was a wonderful year. How many of you remember it? I was 3 years old. I remember it well. John T. Malloy wrote a book entitled Dress for Success. The premise of his book was, what you wear determines your success. Now, in verse 12, Paul says his idea is your spiritual success is determined by your spiritual dress. Now, a lot of us, we want to make sure we are dressed appropriately because your clothes say a lot about you. Most of us give a lot of attention to what we wear because we want to make sure we are in style. The problem with our clothes being in style is styles change quickly. And the problem with styles changing quickly is styles can be different in one culture than they are in a different culture. I mean, what's cool in Bennett, North Carolina, pardon me, it's probably not as cool in Charlotte, North Carolina. You know what I'm saying? And it's probably not quite as hip in New York City. You know what I'm saying? And it's definitely not as the same as cool in Bennett as it is in San Francisco. You know what I'm saying? So culture determines location. But what Paul is saying here applies everywhere. So this morning, the idea of this passage is more than what you dress physically, it's about how you are to behave. So to all of our graduates, this is preparing you for life. This is preparing you not just for tomorrow, although it is for tomorrow. This is preparing you for every day for the rest of your life. And what I would say is, it's living the Christian life the Jesus way. That's why I've entitled it, Jesus Living. The first truth is this. The fashion of the Christian. Look at verse 12. Put on, therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, bowels of mercy, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering. So one of the decisions we make every day is what we're going to wear. Many institutions have dress codes. Well, God has a dress code as well. God lays out in detail what He wants us to wear. When you put on these clothes, we resemble Jesus. Now look at verse 12. First two words, put on. You look at it in the original language, it's in the imperative tense. So He's saying, I want you to put this on every day of your life. And then He gives you five articles of spiritual clothing He wants you to put on. Now every one of you have shoes on. Most of you have socks on. I think the majority of us have belts on. Five articles of clothing He wants all of us to put on. Interestingly enough, very similar what you'll find in Galatians chapter 6, the fruit of the Spirit. You say, what are the five? Look at the verse. Number one, it says bowels of mercy. It's just mercy. It refers to the stomach. He's talking about emotion. Ancient world, apart from Christians, people were merciless. The maimed, sickly, aged, mentally ill were discarded. They were good for nothing. They were just set aside and they were forgotten. Jesus comes on the scene and He had compassion on people. Jesus is saying, I want you to be compassionate. I want you to show mercy toward people. Imagine, I had this thought. Imagine if there was a store called the Mercy Store where you could go any hour of the day and you could just get mercy free of charge. They never ran out and you could get as much as you want. No matter how bad you were, you could get mercy full and free. I'm saying that store would always be in business. First thing he says that we should put on is mercy. Second one I would say is its cousin is kindness. The opposite of kindness is rudeness. Some of us are better at being rude than we are at being kind. Kindness does not happen naturally in many relationships. The way we talk to people, the way we treat people, the way we respond to people. Somebody called me the other day, and I missed their phone call. So I called them back. And evidently, they didn't recognize my number. So they thought I was a salesman. So, who is this? And evidently, they were hard of hearing. They didn't hear who I said I was. I can't hear you. Who is this? I said, it's the preacher. Oh, hey, Pastor. Good to hear your voice. I said, it wasn't so good to hear my voice 10 seconds ago. I am a salesman. I'm selling some Jesus, and you need some. Kindness. A lot of us are lacking in that. And what he's saying, graduates, what he's saying every morning, we should get up and put on some mercy of Jesus. Put on some kindness from Jesus. You don't possess it, so you can't muscle it up. No, Jesus, I need something I don't have. I need some of your mercy. I need some of your kindness. Look at the next one. Humility. Humbleness of mind. It's being willing to give up one's rights to help others. Now, in ancient times, humility were viewed as cowards. That was reserved for slaves. That was reserved for the lower section of society. Pardon me. In ancient times, that was reserved for women. Jesus came on the scene and he said, the greatest among you will be your servants. Christians are called to serve God with humility. Look at the next one. Meekness. Meekness is not weakness. It's power under control. A calm wind that could become a vicious storm. That's meekness. A wild course that has been tamed. That's meekness. Meekness is power to control your tongue rather than losing it. Meekness is the control of your temper when you're tempted to lose it. Jesus, I'm starting off today. I need some mercy. I need some kindness. I'm tempted to be prideful about thinking how great I am. I need some humility. And I'm going to go to work. And I'm tempted to say some cuss words. I need to be controlled by the Holy Spirit. That's what he's talking about. Look at the next one. Long suffering. It means long tempered. It means having a long fuse. It means patient. A patient person doesn't get angry at the wrong things, at the wrong time, or for the wrong reason. You say, all right, how do I do it? Let me sum it up like this. Romans chapter 13, verse 14. Put ye on the Lord Jesus Christ. So every day, Jesus, my flesh suit is sinful. So I am submitting to you. I crucify the flesh, and I'm asking you to live through me. Jesus, I am dead, and I want you to live through me. Number one, the fashion of a Christian. That's probably the easiest one. Number two, the forbearance of a Christian. Look at verse 13. Forbearing one another. Forbearing one another is to put up with, to deal with, or even to tolerate. Bearing one another is to endure hardship or difficulty from another out of a heart of concern for the well-being of their soul. So, let me just get down to where you live. It doesn't matter who you're married to, who you work with, or who you live beside. Sometimes, you're just going to have to tolerate them. And some of you saying, oh, you just don't know who I'm married to. I know who they're married to. Sometimes, you're just going to have to tolerate them. Remember the marriage vows you made? Better for worse. Richer for poorer. Sickness and in health. Sometimes it's a whole lot worse before you get to better. Sometimes it's a whole lot poorer before you get to the richer. Sometimes it's a whole lot sicker, and you're just wiping noses and cleaning floors before you get to that healthier. Remember, Paul is writing to Christians here when he says, forbear. Students, graduates, what it means to deal with, what it means put up with, what it means in Bennett, North Carolina language. Sometimes you get holes in your teeth because you're just tolerating them. So I say it again. Doesn't matter who you're married to. Doesn't matter who you work with. And doesn't matter who you live beside. Sometimes you're just going to have to tolerate them. Newsflash. Not everybody's going to like you. I struggled with this. Because Tracy can tell you. Jesus can tell you. I love everybody. There's a few people I might struggle with. I love everybody. And I thought everybody's going to love me. Some people don't like your vision. Some people don't like your decisions. Some people don't like the way you look. And I'm like, I can't help the way I look. God made me this way. People are going to find faults in you because we all have faults. And the proper answer, just forbear them. That's what he's saying to Christians. Two types of people in the world. Those who want to examine and look over and inspect every person's faults. And those who want to overlook people's faults. That's me. God is the judge. It's not my job to inspect and look at everybody's faults. I want to overlook them. Let God be the judge. Remember Paul and Barnabas? there was old John Mark going on missionary journey. We don't know why John Mark quit. Some people say he was homesick. Some people say he got sick. For whatever reason, he quit in their time of need. And it came time for the second missionary journey. Barnabas said, "Hey, I want to take John Mark." Paul said, "Hey, you quit on me one time, shame on you. You quit on me two times, shame on me. I ain't taking, pardon my grammar, I ain't taking John Mark." There was strife between them. Barnabas went that way, Paul went that way. At the end of Paul's ministry, he said of John Mark, "He's profitable to me." What had happened? He overlooked his mistakes. Part of being successful in life, you got to forbear. My experience, Tracy's experience. Sometimes you just got to tolerate. Bite your tongue. You say, "You're not being very spiritual today." Okay, we want to talk spiritual. Matthew 17, verse 17, if we're talking spiritual. Jesus answered and said, "O faithless and perverse generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I suffer you?" That's Jesus talking. Bennett language, he was tolerating. Secret for life. Put on Jesus. Number two, sometimes you just got to forbear. You got to deal with. Sometimes you just got to tolerate. Number three, forbearance of a Christian. Number three, probably the most important, the forgiveness of a Christian. Verse 13, forbearing one another and forgiving one another. If you're going to be in relationships with people, it requires you to forbear. And it requires you to forgive. Freely offered, many times not deserved. And I'm here to say that Christians, many times, are not good at forbearing. And Christians, many times, are not good at forgiving. Christians can go back and say, "I remember 1978, 704. I remember what you were wearing, and I remember the smirk on your face, what you said to me. I remember it. I remember it." We don't forget. We're not good at forgiving. Forgiveness is an action based upon choice, not emotion. In forbearing, we hold back what we would like to say. In forgiveness, we hold nothing against who we would like to. Forgiveness is an action based on choice and not on emotion. Now listen, not every relationship that has caused us hurt will be restored. So just because you forgive them does not mean you're going to have a relationship with them. But every person that has hurt you, you got to forgive them. Did you get that? Not every relationship that has caused you hurt will be restored. But every person that has hurt you, you must forgive them. You say why. Here it is, and it's simple. Hurt hurts. And if you don't get rid of the hurt, you're going to carry it with you the rest of your life. So here's my question. Are you allowing yesterday's pain to stand in the way of God bringing healing
to you. See, a lot of us are carrying around pain from 1978. And God's saying, I can help you. I can bring liberty. I can bring victory. I can bring healing. But you got to let me. You got to let me by you forgiving and letting go. God is the loving physician who is ready to heal if you'll come in and be his patient. About a year and a half ago, I needed a lawnmower. So I went on Facebook Marketplace and I found a deal. And I'm like, I wonder why this zero turn lawnmower is such a deal. And I bought it. And after I got it home, I realized why it's such a deal. It's a demon-possessed lawnmower. I mean, it just for a year and a half, it has done crazy, weird things that just make no sense. And it will just do it for like 3 months, and then it just stops. And the latest thing, I mean, it runs for like 5 minutes, and then it just dies. And then if you'll let it sit for like 20 minutes, it'll crank up and it'll run for 5 minutes and it just dies. So I have too much pride till today to tell people that I bought this demon-possessed lawnmower. So I decide that I'm going to fix it. Problem is, I don't know anything about mechanicking. So thankfully, somebody invented something called YouTube. So I've been watching YouTube videos. So if you had come by my house in the last 2 weeks, you would have seen me on the ground underneath the lawnmower trying to fix the lawnmower. It was not pretty. And I made it worse. Chase said, what are you doing? I said, I'm fixing the lawnmower. She said, how's it going? I said, not good. Leave me alone. And she came back 2 days late. And I don't have time to fix lawnmowers. Came back to you, and she said, what are you doing? I said, I'm still fixing the lawnmower. And so she came back the next day. She said, when are you going to stop fixing the lawnmower? I said, soon. And I finally took it to the dude who fixed it. My question for you, how long are you going to carry around that hurt when God says, I bind up the brokenhearted? What's true with every person in this auditorium? All of us have been hurt. And we say, I can handle it. I'm not going to let them off the hook for hurting me. And they're hurting you. And have been hurting you since 1978. Look at the last part of the verse and I'll be done. You say, how am I supposed to forgive? Forbearing one another, forgiving one another. If any man have a quarrel against any, even as Christ forgave you, so also do ye. So I'm supposed to forgive the way Jesus forgave me. Jesus forgave me fully. He didn't just forgive me partially. He forgave me of every sin that I ever did and every sin that I forever would do. Jesus forgave me freely. He didn't say, Neil Jackson, if you will do this, then I will forgive you. Jesus forgave me finally. Once and it was done. Remember when Jesus was on the cross? While they were mocking him, while they were spitting upon him, while they were putting the spear in his side, he kept, you look at it in the original, he kept saying, Father, forgive them. They know not what they would do. And he kept repeating it. They did not ask him to forgive him. He was forgiving them, knowing that they would continue to do that. And we're to forgive like that. The garment
of forgiveness is probably the most difficult garment to put on. The other option, think of the most nasty, the grossest, the dirtiest, the smelliest. Just let your mind run with it. The dirtiest, the smelliest, the... That's your choice. Will you put on the garment of forgiveness, or you will put on the garment of bitterness? And that's my problem with Christians. When we refuse to forgive, we say, I'm going to put this barrier around me so my heart doesn't get hurt again. And we put on this nasty robe of bitterness, trying to protect our heart so we don't get hurt again. And we wear the robe of bitterness. Let me close with this. His name was John M. Perkins. You can read his biography. Back in days when things happened that were not just, he was beaten unmercifully by drunken people. They kicked him. They stomped on him repeatedly over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. You read his story, and I cry even to think about it. They took a fork and shoved it down his throat. It should not even happen to any human being. He writes in his story, I was laying there in my blood, and what changed me was when I thought of what Jesus went through for me. How he was unjustly convicted. How he was unjustly crucified. How he was unjustly killed for me, for my sin. He said, I was laying there in my own blood, and God miraculously gave me a vision of what Jesus went through for me. He said, I was in pain, but God gave me a vision of what Jesus went through for me. And he said, what happened? My hate for my offenders vanished, and I had compassion for them. That's what this passage is talking about. Put on the Lord Jesus Christ. That's what our world needs to see.